narrative of storytelling? Is that, I mean, verbal storytelling?
Oh, yes.
Very much so.
Yeah, of course, writing is merely a graphic reflection of what people say, so.
Well, I want to ask you a question. I know I've cut into your speaking of narratives, your narrative of where you were going, but it was my understanding that the Navajo language was first written in the 30s because of the effort of the government to try to explain the cutback on the livestock on the reservation. Now, what can you tell me about that?
Well, it isn't quite correct to say that the Navajo language was first written in the 1930s. I suppose, aside from just a few little collections of vocabulary that were very poorly written back in the middle of the 19th century, the first serious effort to write down Navajo was by Washington Matthews. He was a post surgeon at Fort Wingate back in the mid-1880s. And aside from being a physician and a surgeon, he was very much interested in linguistics and in ethnology, and did a lot of very valuable work with Navajo informants of that period. And of course, the work is reflects the really traditional concepts of old Navajo society. The missionaries began to move into the reservation, seriously at least, sometime around the turn of the century. And when they did, of course, they became concerned with language, because most people didn't speak English. They were concerned as missionaries and as educators, operators of schools, with Christianization of Indians. So they began to study the Navajo language, and they began, of course, to write and develop various types of translations of religious material. Since missionaries sometimes don't collaborate very closely with one another, they belong to different denominations, they of course developed different ways of writing, so that one saw the development of a Protestant system in contradistinction to a Catholic one. They wouldn't have anything to do with each other. Well, the material really is readable, but it has many weaknesses. It had many weaknesses because it wasn't until the 1930s that Father Berard went back to Yale and worked with Edward Sapir and came to realize that Navajo was a tone language. Before that, for some reason or another, they'd never realized that it was a tone language.
Washington Matthews had not?
No. And neither did the previous religious writing systems. They didn't indicate tone. Somehow they misconstrued tone as stress and didn't mark it at all.
Well, forgive me if I ask you what the difference is.
Well,
simply?
It means that these monosyllabic elements that enter into this verbal construction that I pointed out to you here in the book, each one of them carries its inherent tone level. And Navajo has two tones, a low and a high, and two intermediates, a falling and a rising. Well, differences in meaning, then, of a given construction may hinge on tone. So if I said to you, nle, that means he is. But if I said nle, that means you are. So nle, nle makes a difference. Aze, aze makes a difference between two words, the first of which means mouth, and the second of which means medicine. So the only difference the only thing that distinguishes meaning is the inherent tone. Well, the missionaries in the early systems of writing didn't mark tone. So sometimes it's very difficult to determine just which form of word that fits the context best.
Sure.
And Then they didn't always mark vowel length, and contrasting vowel length in Navajo also distinguishes meaning. So if I said bitor, to is short, it has short duration, that means his water. If I said bito, then I say his soup or his juice, because it's long, and this is the distinction, bito, bito, bitsek, bitse, and that sort of thing. Well, they didn't always mark these, and as a result, sometimes it's a little difficult to figure out what word was involved. Well, anyway, in the 1930s, it became obvious that Navajo was a tone language, and St. Michael's began to mark tones in their transcriptions of Navajo words. They used the St. Michael's after the training that Father Berard got from Edward Sapir. St. Michael's began to use the form of transcription, the letter forms that were, I guess, derived from the International Phonetic Alphabet and were in use by Dr. Sapir, who was primarily interested in comparative linguistics. So the thesis was that it was better to use just one grapheme, one alphabetic form for one sound, and then wherever this sound occurred in other languages, it would be quickly relatable to Navajo in this instance. So they used, for example, a Greek lambda to represent dl, D-L, we write it D-L. And they used the Greek lambda with a little, with a little inverted circumflex on the top of it to represent tl, which we write as T with an L and a bar through it. And then they used a Greek lambda with an inverted circumflex and an apostrophe within this inverted circumflex to represent t, like in the word a. Well, the point is that when the Bureau of Indian Affairs became interested in the possibility of utilizing written Navajo for communications purposes, this system of writing was much too cumbersome. It couldn't be reproduced on an ordinary typewriter. You had to have special characters on a typewriter in order to write it, and the decision then had already been reached by the end of the 1930s to utilize a special form, which came to be known as the government system of writing, I guess. It's the one you see here, and it makes minimal use of unusual characters. In fact, there really are none at all except a barred L to represent a voiceless L, since there's both a voiced and a voiceless L in them.
Now, well, I was just going to say then there actually had been quite a bit of background in writing Navajo before the Bureau got involved in it.
Yeah, it goes back toward the opening of the century, really. Well, you could start it, I always started with Washington Matthews, because I think he's a first person that made any serious effort to transcribe Navajo.
What did he transcribe then? Dictionary?
He transcribed ethnological material.
Okay.
Legends, songs, chants, that sort of thing. If you get his book entitled The Night Chant, you'll find a lot of transcriptions of chants and then translations. And really, you have to read the translation to read the transcription, because, he didn't have the kind of training that people had 75 years later, or however long it is. So as a net result, of course, he was doing just doing his best to write down what he thought he heard.
Well, was the Bureau able to, do you know if they were able to communicate with the Navajos by writing some of the instructions? Writing, for instance, explaining why
grazing regulations and that sort of thing. Back at the beginning, when they initially began to use written Navajo, there were a wide variety of motivations. One lay in the field of health, and they had an interpreter school at Fort Defiance sometime back in the 1930s, I guess, 1936, 37, something like that, in an effort to develop a vocabulary of terms that could be used by medical interpreters and thus pave the way to better diagnosis of patients. So this was one motivation in the area of health. Another was, of course, in the area of those ongoing federal programs that the administration placed great importance on, one of which was, as you point out, stock reduction. So some materials were in fact developed relating to grazing controls and that sort of thing. In fact, we even translated the grazing permits into Navajo and that sort of thing.
Who was involved in it during this period then? This was before you got in?
No. When I say grazing permits, I'm already in the picture by that
okay.
time. Grazing permits, court forms, that's all I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
They were translated into Navajo.
But did you get into this before 1940 when you took on that
Only
position?
To the extent that I was in the field out in the Navajo country, and Harrington was in Washington, and Harrington was in contact with Beatty, so between the three of us we were working at a distance, yes. But at that period, I wasn't concerned with the subject matter related to livestock control or anything. It was primarily with primers and pre-primers for use in teaching written Navajo to children and to adults.
This is still in the 30s then, mm-hmm. that you're talking about, before you took the official position.
Yeah.
You
and then even after 1940, there was very little written in Navajo relating to livestock control. It was such a highly controversial subject that I was very reluctant to put anything in written Navajo that related to it, because that could kill it. And I didn't think excuse me.
Let's go in just a little more to how much you actually worked with the bilingual instructional material before you were actually hired on officially.
Well, working with Dr. Harrington, who in turn was in contact with the Education Office and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, materials were developed for pre-primers, primers, charts, that sort of thing, largely by people who had some expertise in the writing of children's literature, pre-primers. Unfortunately, at that period, they had to be written in English first and then translated into Navajo, which is not really a very good approach to the preparation of primer material for use in another language. Obviously, the logical approach is to do it in the language originally and determine vocabulary in accordance with the type of vocabulary that's beginning children speaking that language as their native language have. And of course that's one of the areas of concern of this Navajo reading study that I'm now involved with. And we're producing material, primer material and that sort of thing in Navajo, but it's being done by Navajos who at the same time are in the College of Education, and some of them have already had experience as elementary teachers, so they're well equipped as native speakers with this kind of educational and training background to produce children's literature that's far superior to anything that we were able to produce in the 1930s. At that time, there weren't any Navajos trained as teachers who could fill this need. So the other approach was taken by Dr. Beatty. And you have Little Man's Family, for example. Well, Little Man's Family is quite adequate in its English version, because it was written by someone that was trained in the production of children's literature in English. But that doesn't mean that when these same terms were translated into Navajo that they were necessarily also